This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Will Wendell Carter Jr.'s injury that will keep him out for several weeks, along with Otto Porter Jr.'s injury, provide ample excuse for the Bulls to write off this season to health issues?
No. I don't believe that's allowed. I think that, one of the things, Wendell Carter's going to be out, I believe, 4 to 6 weeks was the announcement with the ankle, which is really a pity. Because one of the things you wanted to see was him play. He couldn't play enough last year. And, you know, as much as we talk about who's not fulfilling their promise and what the issues are, whether it's talent or coaching, I do believe that we need to see these guys play together to really come up with some sort of a conclusion. We thus far have concluded that they're awful. And I get it. I understand. I see the record and I've watched the games, but I would like to see them all together, including Otto Porter Jr., and see what they have. But that's not going to happen for another, month and a half, at least 2 months, maybe. And maybe we don't see Porter this year.
And I think that's almost the point. It's like, that's going to buy them some cover, because you can almost envision that being the rationale. And like, well, we don't know enough about this group because we haven't seen them play together long enough, because we lost Porter for the first half of the season, and then he came back and he only played in 20 some games, and then Wendell Carter Jr. was out, and already you can envision how this is going to sound postseason. I don't know how bad it's going to get. That's the one thing that's sort of maybe the biggest unknown. When you're losing a guy who, for all you say about Wendell Carter Jr., as a defensive player, he's a pretty solid interior defender. And when he's not there to do what he does over the next 4 weeks or so, how bad is it going to get for this Bulls team? Will they bottom out? And what will that mean? And what will it look like? So I do think you have sort of a built-in excuse here because of injuries, but you're getting these injury excuses coming the last couple of seasons. You might need a different core if your core continues to get hurt. So I can see them wanting to write off the season to health issues, but I think that we are beyond the point where, people should accept that.
Yeah, I think you've seen from diehard Bulls fans before that they would kind of go with the flow and take what they're given in terms of pronouncements from the team, like, hey, this is why this happened and et cetera. I think that has actually run out. I think you're seeing that with some of the attendance issues, not necessarily tickets sold, but people in the seats, butts in the seats for the game. The Porter Jr. thing, I'll give them. He's a key part. But, I mean, who's not hurt? Zach LaVine's not hurt. Lauri Markkanen's not hurt. John Paxson was all over the place before the season saying this was a playoff team. And you're 12 games under 500, and you're down there with the Wizards and the Cavaliers in the standings in a bad Eastern Conference. I just don't buy it. I think this group, and certainly I'll include the coach and the front office people in there, I think the fans are getting very weary of what this group has done.
I think weary is an understatement. I think the weariness set in a long time ago, and now it's trending in the direction of ambivalence or just kind of neglect or people not even paying any mind to this Bulls organization. And not only, of course, it starts with the product that's on the court, which has been subpar and underwhelming and disappointing all season long, but then you look at, who's acquiring these players, who's putting the team together, who's hiring the coach that's supposed to get the players to play better. And it always starts at the top. So part of the question here is, will these injuries provide excuses for the Bulls? Not to anybody sane or not to anybody with any sort of credibility, because that's preposterous. You could have every single one of these guys healthy all season long, and this collective group has not shown anything a competitor or a playoff team this year. But then again, you look at who's running the team, and John Paxson, as recently as a month ago, is still bringing up Derrick Rose's knee injury that occurred back in 2012. I mean, 2012, this was 8 years ago, and he's still bringing it up at this point. So I'm sure
he's answering questions. Okay. And Michael, you're wrong too. Paxson was not the guy running around claiming they were a playoff team. That was Boylan, and he backed him saying, well, that's the goal. He was reluctantly saying that. He wasn't espousing it as fact. He wasn't promulgating.
December 16th, 2019, quote, not making excuses, but when Derek got hurt, that really kind of set things in motion where it changed a lot of how we were looking at things.
That's answering a question.
I mean, it did. So look, I haven't looked back on that. We went full in. I felt at that time we were doing it for the right reasons. We were trying to get back where we want to be. December 16th, 2019, he's still talking about Derrick
Rose. He's answering questions about it. Was Derrick Rose in town?
Didn't even ask about Derrick Rose, and he brought it up. He always brings it up.
He's not an excuse maker.
He's not. Oh, my God.
Derrick Rose is going to be at the All-Star weekend, though, right?
Yeah,
he's going to be Chicago's lone representative, maybe.
Skills contest.
Yeah. He's going to be the most popular player at the Chicago All-Star weekend.
Now, this is another interesting debate about John bringing up and was he asked a question. But here's the thing. Derrick Rose is able to play again, obviously, right? Clearly he's able to play again. If John Paxson's still so in love with him, then he should have made efforts to bring him back. I know that's not the question at hand right now, but he should have made efforts to bring him back.
Well, that's really interesting point.
He thinks that he's the missing link, because they were in a position this offseason where they could have used a backup guard. Right? Or a starting guard?
Right. Either one, right?
Instead of, right? So if you want to keep going back there, where was the effort? And was there resistance?
Maybe that's why.
Dustin, do you believe for a second that Derrick Rose is the same player he was when he left here?
Of course not.
Yeah.
He's changed. He actually woke up and changed his game.
Yes.
Right. Right. It took a while. But let's answer the question, okay? They're 12 games below 500 right now. Okay. By the 16th of February, which is when the entire NBA and the entire national media covering the NBA lands on our great city, I could see them being 15 games under 500 at that point, based on what's coming up and injuries also. Do they want that? I mean, I think you have to do something, because all anybody's going to do is be coming in and making fun of Jim Boylan and the Chicago Bulls around the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th of February. I don't know that they want that.
They deserve every bit of it.
I didn't say they didn't. I'm just saying I don't know that they want that. But I get it. You can make the case. Well, there's injuries. National media, there's injuries. And that's why we're 16, 15 games under 500. I've got Bulls fatigue right this second.
You know, that's a good question.
Which coach is under the most pressure in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and why? Who is the best coach left, and who is the worst?
Oh, a lot there. I think there's no question to me that the coach under the most pressure, the coach who has the most to lose by losing a football game this weekend, is Andy Reid. Andy Reid now has the door open. Obviously, the Ravens are the class of the AFC, but I think if you're Andy Reid, you feel like your defense is playing better. You have Patrick Mahomes, the reigning MVP, and you have an opportunity to get to the Super Bowl because Bill Belichick is not in your way. And that's a historical nemesis, and I think that's an opportunity. Sure, the Ravens are the Ravens, and John Harbaugh has a Super Bowl ring, and you want one if you're Andy Reid. So if you lose this weekend, you have to deal not necessarily with the nagging questions that will come, but you know, as part of your legacy, and you want to erase some of these questions that continue to linger about the best coach who never won a Super Bowl. And that, to me, underscores the pressure that he's under. Who's the best coach left and who is the worst? I think the best coach left is John Harbaugh. I think he is the guy that, to me, is probably the coach of the year because of what he did to change everything about the offense to tailor the scheme around the skill set of Lamar Jackson, and that's what great coaches do. And he certainly is a great coach. Who's the worst one? Well, that's a mean question. That is a mean question. But I think the guy who you have maybe the least amount of confidence in going into any sort of clutch game or a playoff game would be Bill O'Brien. I think he was one bad decision away from getting fired after last weekend. Had they lost that game, had he made another sort of blunder. So I think Bill O'Brien probably, to me, if you're ranking the coaches 1 through 8, he's 8.
Yeah, that's interesting because let's start with at the beginning of the question. You're right about Andy Reid. I understand expectations would make that answer Andy Reid, but really the expectation is that Andy Reid could lose because he's done that quite often at home in his first playoff game. He needs to win, and he needs to win a Super Bowl to get Kevin on his side as a Hall of Famer. Kevin likes to proclaim Hall of Famer, so we'll get into that a little bit. But I do think that Andy Reid's resume is short that Super Bowl, and he needs it. The best coach is Harbaugh. I get that. It could be Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll's done a very good job, and that's why the coach under the most pressure could actually be Matt LaFleur. What has he done? Do we know? Do we know if he's done anything? Do we know if Mike Pettine isn't the coach of the year, Vic Fangio? Do we really understand how the dynamic works with the quarterback? And I think that you could argue that he's the guy under the most pressure because he's never done it before. He is this rookie coach that, you know, we see how that works. We remember last year, and he'll be mad at Mason Crosby if he decides to go on national television after missing a kick. The other thing is, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the Seahawks have won the most games, the most close games in the NFL. They've won the most games settled by a single score.
Yes.
And that is... You got to give Pete Carroll credit for coaching there. Now, I think John Harbaugh is coach of the year, and John Harbaugh is certainly the guy that changed things, that changed his scheme and changed the way they were doing business because of the quarterback, and that's the genius move of the 2019 NFL season. So all hell Harbaugh. I'm all for him, but I wonder if it's fair to say Bill O'Brien and not Matt LaFleur. I think Matt LaFleur could be the worst coach there. But we don't know, and we're going to find out come Sunday night, 5:40 kickoff.
Yeah, I think the answers to a lot of these are on the AFC side, only because of the relative youth on a lot of the NFC. You know, Kyle Shanahan, the expectations are high, but, you know, it's kind of he's younger than I am. He's 40 years old. It doesn't have a ton of experience. There's built-in excuses for a lot of these guys, whereas the Andy Reids and the John Harbaughs of the world, I don't think it's there. My initial instinct was Reid on the most pressure, but then as I thought about it, I think Harbaugh, just because Baltimore has had such a great run and because Lamar is the MVP of the league and he's been so magical this year, if they lost this, could you imagine if they lost the Titans this weekend? The disappointment, I mean, that would be a huge thing in the NFL. I pick Harbaugh for that. I also pick Harbaugh for the best coach left. I do like Pete Carroll. I do like Andy Reid. You know, the Harbaugh thing certainly this year and with the Super Bowl championship, I go with that. In terms of worst coach left, I had Bill O'Brien written down, but I was swayed slightly. The LaFleur thing makes sense only because, not because I think he's terrible, but just because I have no idea really what exactly he is. We have a pretty good idea what Bill O'Brien is. We have a pretty good idea what most of these other guys are. But LaFleur is still kind of a work in progress here in year one.
He's Matt Nagy a year later is what he is.
Yeah.
We don't know LaFleur's ceiling.
More hair, though, than Matt Nagy.
And no visor.
Visor, though.
And yeah, Ryan Pace didn't factor that in. The best coach left, I think, pretty handily, it would be John Harbaugh. Not only does he have the hardware, but he has been there for 12 years now in Baltimore. They've only been under 500 once in the entire tenure of John Harbaugh. And he's gone through, you know, Joe Flacco, and he got him a Super Bowl championship. And there's certainly no real debate anymore about, you know, what Joe Flacco was and what he is now. He's not going to the Hall of Fame like Russell Wilson or anything like that, but he got him a Super Bowl ring. And now he's had to tailor the entire offense for a guy that couldn't be any less like Joe Flacco in Lamar Jackson, and he's made an MVP out of Lamar Jackson. They're 14-2. They are the favorite, I would say, in either conference. And I think John Harbaugh is head and shoulders above any of these coaches left. And there's a lot of good ones left. Andy Reid's a hell of a coach. I like Pete Carroll quite a bit. I mean, there are definitely good coaches left, but I rate Harbaugh far and above the rest of them. I would say Andy Reid's under the most amount of pressure. He, again, has a very good resume and is consistently in the playoffs, but until he wins a Super Bowl, he's always going to have that question, and there's always going to be that kind of hovering over his head. So I think, especially with a really tough Houston team coming in to his house over the weekend, I think he's under a lot of pressure. The worst, I have LaFleur slash O'Brien written down. I think you could probably flip a coin for different reasons. Bill O'Brien's never really impressed me. I mean, I think Houston's a good team, but they're in a weaker division. I think maybe they have an easier route into the playoffs sometimes than other teams do. So he's got to show me a little bit. LaFleur, we still don't know what Matt LaFleur is.
Who's the best coach in the league? The best coach in the league. Number one.
Bill Belichick.
Who beat him last week? Mike Vrabel. Why aren't we talking about Vrabel?
Vrabes.
Beat the best. Don't you take the crown.
To be the man, you got to beat the man. Styling and profiling. Anyway, Kevin and I will do a wrestling show on the other side of the glass. 80s, 90s wrestling for 500, Alex.
Now that would be a Jeopardy category we could run.
Okay. I get the love affair that this panel's having for Harbaugh, but if you're having the reasons that I'm hearing, where's Pete Carroll in this mix?
Keep talking. You cut out for a second there. Bad connection.
Why is Pete Carroll not good? He's got hardware. He's got consistency. He's won many division titles.
All the close games.
And I'm just saying, like, I don't think John Harbaugh deserves credit for reworking the offense.
Well, I think he does. You ask a question, I'll try to answer. I think Pete Carroll, somehow, in the back of some people's minds, when they're evaluating great coaches, he is a great coach. I love everything about him. But he blew a Super Bowl.
I get it. I mean,
and I wonder if that gets in the way of calling him a great coach.
That's the anchor right around his neck is not putting beast mode with the ball over the goal line and trying to get cute. I get it. Okay,
he's going to do it this year.
For my money, based on who's left right now, it's Andy Reid. And I know he doesn't have it, but if you want to get to the postseason and win games and things like that, he's really good. He's also really good off of a bye. Okay, I would be absolutely floored if Andy Reid and the Chiefs didn't win. I think what Andy Reid has done with quarterbacks is unbelievable. He obviously saw something in Patrick Mahomes that other people didn't see and went and got the guy. Okay, so he deserves some credit for that. He deserves credit for what's going on at quarterback and offense more than Jim Harbaugh does. We don't have time. We'll get into that later. As far as the worst coach,
John,
I think it's interesting that we talked about Matt LaFleur and comparing him to what's going on here in Chicago. Maybe we just don't. Maybe he will be that next year. But doesn't he deserve some credit for getting along with Aaron Rodgers and actually convincing Aaron Rodgers that it's okay to run the ball and it's okay to not be the hero every week? I think that's a good thing. Bill O'Brien's the worst coach. Andy Reid's the best coach, in my opinion. To shorten up my answer.
That is an unbelievably great question.
What will be the biggest surprise in the weekend's playoffs? Who will be the player most discussed around the league on Monday morning?
This is a hard question because I believe that the bye week and the off time and all the rest of it, the time for preparation and the physical. Look how good the Vikings were after their bye week against the Bears. So I think that I'm saying, look how good they were last week down in New Orleans after they had the bye week. I would say that this is going to go to form, and I think that the league believes it's going to go to form. I don't think that we're going to see the Niners get an upset. I think we'll be talking about all the first-round draft picks on that defensive line. I don't see the Ravens losing that game. I think we'll be talking about the dynamism of playmaking ability of the quarterback, Lamar Jackson. I do not see the Chiefs losing. I think we could be talking quite a bit about about how good Patrick Mahomes is and what should have been. The Packers game is the only one to me that is not a certainty. So there is a possibility we could be talking about Russell Wilson, but I don't believe so. I think we're going to end up talking about two quarterbacks in particular, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes, and I think the whole thing's going to go to form.
I really want to make an argument for the Tennessee Titans. I really want to sit here and tell you how they could win this game, because I think they could win that game if they reduce the game and they eliminate kind of one or two series by running the football and eating the clock, and Derrick Henry gets another, right, you know, 200 yards rushing, and all of a sudden Lamar Jackson, you can't tackle him, and he can't hurt you if he's on the sideline, so he's neutralized. You could make that argument, but I'm not there yet. I think it could be closer than people anticipate, but I just don't think the Titans have enough to beat the Ravens. So I don't think that'll be a surprise. I have the same sort of feeling, an inkling about the Vikings going into San Francisco. I really wouldn't shock me if they continue the momentum that they took into New Orleans, because Kirk Cousins, I think the weight is lifted, and he may be the best quarterback on the field against the 49ers, because, you know, Jimmy G has his first playoff start, and that is – that's a moment that I think you just don't know how he's going to handle. So I think that could be a possible surprise, but I think you're right. I think the 49er defense is just too good to doubt at this point. So I am the one who's going to – I think the surprise comes with the Seahawks knocking off the Packers. I think it ends this weekend for Matt LaFleur and company. I think that Russell Wilson goes into Lambeau, and he has a moment, and Pete Carroll has a moment, and beast mode, and all the things that went well for the Seahawks that go well when they travel – are going to go well again. So I think that's the biggest surprise. Who are we going to be talking about? Well, I think Lamar Jackson might be neutralized because the Titans are going to run the ball. So I think it's going to be a Patrick Mahomes moment. This weekend, he's going to shine. He's going to be the guy who does something dazzling, and we'll be talking about Patrick Mahomes Monday morning.
Scary thing is, so far we're all going in the exact same directions, which should probably tell everyone listening
go
to
the
go
other
the
way.
Exact opposite,
yep.
Exactly.
You're right, Mike.
Because I have Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes written down as the guys we're going to be talking about. I like Seattle and Green Bay. David, I also had the inkling as I was watching that Tennessee game last week, I'm like, this team can beat Baltimore. They play defense. They run the ball. I mean, it's the same, you know, same game plan, right? So I would not be surprised, I guess, if Tennessee won. I'm not going to pick them to win, but I would not be surprised if that happens. Derrick Henry would obviously jump into guy we're talking about thing, maybe Ryan Tannehill. But in terms of the rest of the games, I think they do go to form. I think Kansas City is your big winner of the weekend, and Mahomes is the guy we're talking about, and Russell Wilson hopefully with Seattle for both personal and what I think reasons in terms of rooting.
Well, I know Green Bay's playing at home. They are the favorites, but, you know, in terms of the betting line, and I understand a lot of people here or in Wisconsin or around the area will you know, think it's crazy, but I never had a doubt in my mind that Seattle's going to go in there and win this game. If I were a betting man, if I had money to do so, I would bet a lot of money on the Seattle Seahawks to win on Sunday evening. So I've had it in my head all week that it's just such a sure thing that I guess I forgot that it would be a surprise to a lot of people, and it would technically be an upset. If I wanted to go out on a limb a little bit, I would say Houston has a shot in Kansas City. I don't know if I'd pick them, but I think if you are looking for something a little bit outside the box, given Andy Reid's ability to maybe fall through more often than not in the playoffs, and given Deshaun Watson's performance in the second half of that game. Of course, he didn't play very well in the first half last weekend, but he's got that ability to pull rabbits out of his hat and do extraordinary things. I think even with an improved Chiefs defense, and obviously, you know, the offense, which can run it up as well, I think when you have Deshaun Watson on your team, despite Bill O'Brien, if you have Deshaun Watson, you have a chance. I wouldn't be completely floored to see Deshaun Watson and the Texans go into Kansas City and get a win. And if that were the case, we'd all be talking about Deshaun Watson on Monday, not just here, not just in Houston, not just in South Carolina. Everybody would be talking about Deshaun Watson.
Well, I hate to say Kevin's right, but you know, whatever you think is the upset, Mully, you pointed out to start the show, we've got some really big odds except for the Green Bay Seattle game, right? And that game I saw yesterday moved around quite a bit. Supposedly a huge six-figure bet was placed on the Packers at -4.5, moved the number to 5 for a little bit. I guess it's come back the other way with some money on Seattle once the 5 happened. But where is that upset going to take place? I just fear, we talked about also how this is the best weekend because now the big boys are playing. We had a little bit of an NCAA tournament feel last weekend where we had some upsets, or at least, I mean, some people thought the Saints were the best team in the NFC heading in to this postseason, and they've been eliminated. So now, if you think it's going to be chalky, who's going to be the reason that the chalk is as chalky? And I think it's going to be that 49ers defense. I expect the 49ers to absolutely punch the Vikings in the mouth. Now, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo will have a couple of touchdown passes, and even though the 49ers defense did all the dirty work, we'll be talking about Jimmy G. If the 49ers lose on Saturday afternoon, we're going to be talking about Jim. Either way, we're going to be talking about Jimmy G and the 49ers come Monday morning.
Well, I think that's a great question, and for us, it's pretty easy.
Tight ends coach Clancy Barone has a track record of developing Pro Bowl players at the position. Can he pull that trick off with any of the guys currently on the Bears roster, and will he help land Pat Shurmur?
I don't know about Pat Shurmur. I think that's an opportunity that he has to evaluate whether or not he wants to come to a situation where he probably won't call the plays. As far as Barone, it's a tight ends coach. I think the impact of a tight ends coach on any staff is limited. He certainly has a good track record. He certainly has guys on his resume that you want to give him credit for. But I do think that it's, you know, this could be, you know, the Bears hiring the most qualified guy out there, or you could look at it as, you know, 1995 when Ryan Pace's father sent tapes around to schools in the Midwest of his son in Texas to take a chance on. Eastern Illinois had an assistant coach, Clancy Barone, who took a chance on Ryan Pace, and they gave him an opportunity to play at Eastern Illinois University. And this is, you know, a guy who is he hiring the most qualified assistant, or is he doing a favor for an old friend? Maybe both, probably both, because I don't want to diminish anything that he's accomplished in his career or his resume. But I think you have to keep that in mind when you're talking about coaching industry is full of guys who, you know, hire people that they know that they're comfortable with. And this certainly fits the bill because Ryan Pace and Clancy Barone go way back to 1995 in Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, that's a nice connection. Look, Clancy Barone's a pretty good coach. I'm not going to diss him. I like a tight ends coach that has been an offensive line coach. So I would imagine that the guy that we're talking about is Adam Shaheen, who would seemingly fit the profile of a big guy that could do some blocking and catch the ball. I don't know. I don't know that that's ever going to happen. I heard the general manager say that when he's been on the field, he's been pretty good. I haven't seen it, so it's maybe he's talking about practice. I don't know what he's talking about. But no, I don't.
We're talking about practice,
yeah,
man.
That's right. I don't think they have the guys on the roster right now. I'm not sure what to make of Trey Burton. I just don't know what to make of him. And if he's healthy and he can go, he's proven to be okay. He can get enough out of him. But no, I don't think they have the right guys on the roster to answer that question. And Shurmur, if you give him play calling duties, maybe he comes here. I would be very surprised that he'd want to come here and mock up plays with the head coach.
Yeah, I think the key to this question is that middle one based on the guys on the roster. I think the answer there is no. I liked Trey Burton when they signed him. I still like him as a player. He just has not been healthy. And you know, this whole year was essentially a write-off with the tight end position. I think they need to really get some hits at that position. The Shaheen thing hasn't worked. Burton, due to injury or whatever, has not necessarily worked. And you know, you're down to your fourth and fifth guys by the end of the season, who were not bad, but you know, they're fourth and fifth guys. I think you got to improve the talent at that position. And will he help land Shurmur? I don't know. The connection is interesting, but I think the play calling thing is going to be the big thing. And as for Clancy Barone, sure, sounds great. I mean, I don't know a ton about him, but he's got a track record, and he's the tight ends coach. So, you know, we'll see what kind of tight ends they have. I'm sure that will depend.
No and no.
Is that because we're short on time?
Partially.
Okay. I think it's interesting that he's got some ties as also an assistant offensive line coach. So, obviously, we're all in agreement that that's an area of concern. So, maybe he can help coach them up. Where did he work last season?
Clancy Barone?
Nowhere.
Thank you.
That's the second guy who they've hired
that
who worked.
Didn't have a job last year. Right. Not even a college job. Didn't have a job. That's my only concern with it, and that's why I think it tilts over to David's. I'm doing a guy who did me a solid.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
The Cubs and White Sox have shown polar opposite spending this offseason. How many positions can the White Sox honestly claim to be better at than the Cubs?
That's an interesting question, and one that takes a lot of time to actually work through. I don't know who's on the Cubs. It's hard for me to sit here and tell you that the center fielder is Albert Almora Jr. if it's going to end up being Hayward, because you go out and you've signed Castellanos back. If Castellanos isn't back, is Hayward in right field, or did he get traded along with Wilson Contreras and the Nolan Arenado deal? It just seems like there's so many possibilities of so many guys. So you just look at it straight up. I think I'll take Louis Robert over Albert Almora Jr. just because the unknown versus the known. I think, is Chris Bryant the third baseman? Is Moncada against Chris Bryant here?
Today he is.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I think you have to go on today.
I'll take Chris Bryant. I'll take Rizzo over Abreu. I will take Grandal based on just liking Grandal. I will take Eloy over Schwarber. I'll take Edwin Encarnacion over Schwarber too, because I think Schwarber is a DH, isn't he? I'm not sure. Baez over Anderson. You know, I guess Hayward over Mazzara. We don't know anything about Mazzara. The tough one for me is Madrigal. Is he going to play versus Nico Horner? Is he going to play? I think there's a lot of unknowns with both teams, and it's a difficult one to go through. I like the Sox bullpen. I like their starting pitching because they've improved it, but it's hard to go head-to-head because we don't know who the hell's on either of these teams or who's up.
So the question says, which ones can the White Sox claim to be better than the Cubs' positions? Give me Louis Robert all day. I'll take him in center. I'll take Eloy in left. I will take Madrigal, just because you just don't know if Nico Horner is going to be there. And I know you don't know much about Madrigal, but I just like
Madrigal.
Is he
going to be there?
I don't know. But you have to pick a lane here. So I think Grandal is probably...
Hold on a minute. This was posed as one of the best questions before we started, and I agree. But let's keep it the best question. If they had to go... If they went to camp today...
Yes.
And they were playing a spring training game and playing the... All right. Regulars. Nico, who else is playing second base? It's Nico Horner.
It's got to be, doesn't it?
So why haven't they
committed to it, Cub guys?
I don't know is not the answer. We do know.
We don't know that Madrigal's going to start the season with the White Sox.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't. Madrigal's not a guarantee.
Who's the starting second baseman today?
Danny Mendick?
Mendick.
Probably.
Yeah.
For a month or a month
and
a half.
We're going to grind out on the second baseman.
Okay. You're the one who asked.
Let's answer the question. I don't know. That's not an answer to a question.
I'm going Robert, Grandal, Jimenez, and second base.
How about Madrigal?
Okay.
How about Abreu over Rizzo?
That's a hard call, but I'd go with Rizzo.
I would go with Rizzo, too, I think. But, I'll go with Eloy, Robert, and Grandal because he's considered one of the better catchers in baseball. And so is Contreras, but he has to be, available to be considered that guy.
It's second base, right?
Yeah. Is that an acceptable answer?
I take Eloy. I take Robert. I think there are good arguments at third base, first base, catcher, certainly closer position. Who knows which Craig Kimbrel shows up. But the for sure ones that I would take are the two outfield positions. And I would also take Grandal by a nose over Contreras.
Yeah, I think I would go with Grandal. I like Wilson Contreras quite a bit, but he's shown in multiple seasons that he's somebody you have to worry about injury-wise. He's had hamstring problems. He's had lower leg injuries before. I mean, he only played in 100 games last year. I think, fair or not, that's probably a slight on him. I'll take Eloy over Kyle Schwarber. Again, I'm not slighting Kyle Schwarber. I'm a fan of the player. Take him on the White Sox any day, but I think Eloy... I mean, the effortless power that he showed as a rookie. I think the ceiling is the roof, in the words of one former Chicago Bull there. Center field, easily. I would take I'd take Louis Anderson over Albert Almora, let alone Louis Robert. I mean, Albert Almora is dreadful. Third base, I'd probably go with Moncada over Chris Bryant right now.
Nice.
And then I would say the Cubs have the advantage in right field, Hayward over Mazzara. Javi Baez over Tim Anderson. Nico Horner, I think, is a hell of a young player. I think I got a lot of time for him. I'd take him over Mendick at this point, clearly, and I'd go with Rizzo over Jose Abreu.
Louis Robert, the only spot. That's it.
That's the only guy you would take on the White Sox over a Cub position player?
Today, yes.
Today. We'll see what happens when the season begins. Dustin doesn't
That's
know.
No love for Aloy.
Well, I love Aloy's bat, but I mean, as much as we make fun of Schwarber's defense, I mean, Aloy is worse defensively than Schwarber in left field.
Where's Alfonso Soriano when you need him?
312.
Still cashing checks.
644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.